Welcome to the Dividend Talk Podcast, episode 29, quarter four portfolio review. Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of Dividend Talk. I'm your co-host, Engineer My Freedom, and today I'm with European DGI. This is a podcast where we discuss our passion for dividend growth investing with our own unique European flavor. If you're new to this channel, please hit the like button and subscribe to us and check out our previous episodes on YouTube and Spotify. See you on the inside. Hey everyone, it's our first podcast of 2021. Hope everybody is doing well. How was your Christmas, European DGI?
Yeah, really good. Lots of food, of course, but in a small circle, but I really enjoyed it. It was a good time to be with the family, but at the same time, I spent some time pushing out some content, which I already had for a long time in my head. So actually, it really allowed me to clear up my head a little bit. And yeah, that feels as a relief as well. How about yours?
I was completely lazy. I didn't do anything. I stayed off Twitter, didn't really post that on the blog, just kind of switched off. I spent lots of time with family and friends that I don't really get to see a lot because I'd be working or always busy. So it was nice. I've drank a lot. So the last podcast we did, I've got a couple of emails actually to say you sounded a bit hoarse. So I'm sure they could tell I was slightly worse for wear, but... No, new year, new me. So no drink for a while. Focus on health and getting back into the swing of things.
Cheers on that one.
We'll see how long that lasts.
Exactly. In the end, you have some good liquor in Ireland. So I can imagine it's tempting.
It's tempting. But then when you wake up with a hangover and you have kids telling you to go running with them, it's not worth it. Oh.
Okay, so let's go to our regular news items first of the week. What has caught your attention during the break?
So not a lot, as I said. I wasn't online a lot, but something I saw triggered my thoughts because I remember, was it last week or the week before, you mentioned Unilever and others going back onto Facebook advertising. But their chief integrity guy at the company, I think it's Rob Letterman, he left Facebook, which is quite interesting, and it was worthy of the news on Reuters. So they didn't say why, and Facebook refused to comment, but it's interesting that he decides to leave now, and I'm just wondering if there was anything behind it from Facebook point of view. Is it just he was leaving anyway, or did he not agree with the policies?
Or maybe he has fixed everything already and he came to the conclusion that Facebook is the most integer company in the world. So there was nothing left for him anymore.
Yeah,
I mean, there are always banks to choose from.
plenty of work with banks.
Exactly.
It was interesting just the timing of it and how it happened and how it was announced. So it'd be interesting to see if Facebook actually do come out and say why he's left or if it was planned all along.
I mean, it's nice that you caught this because I think these are these could be early signs of things going on. I mean, it's not for us to speculate here like that, but I think as a smart investor, it's good to keep an eye on let's say movements in the board and the executive management and such, because if this happens more often or if more news leaks out, then maybe this could be a good indicator of what's going on there. So far, I think if the chief integrity officer leaves Facebook, I wouldn't be surprised. All the shit has hit the fan anyway already. So if there's still more there, then I think it's like with Trump, at a certain moment, people don't take it any more serious because they get tired of it. And it keeps going up then. So yeah, let's see. It would be, I would really not be happy because I own some Facebook, if there's really a data issue there again or something like that. Because then Mark Zuckerberg deserves jail time.
It'd be one to watch over 2021. Yeah. I know a lot of people have recommended him, and they are heavily invested. So we'll see.
So myself, what caught my attention today on the Dutch news, there was a nice article about space exploration in 2021. And this is what I found really interesting, because I would love to have some space in my portfolio, because I see this as one of the you know, trends for the next two decades. I just don't want to own Boeing. That's what I do know. But you know, what I read there is that there are a few countries are going to the moon. So also Russia is, they had their, what was it, lunar program mothballed, and they took it out again, and they started having some ideas again. I think they want to go to the south side of the moon. China, India, and of course America. Then also three countries are going to, or they have launched their equipment towards Mars. So also more analysis will be done on Mars. And for me, and both SpaceX and what is it, Blue Origin from Jeff Bezos, they're going to launch this year, SpaceX, I think, a 50 meter long rocket, and Blue Origin a 100 meter long rocket. I think they will not launch it, but at least they want to share their design. I mean, this is crazy what's going on at the moment. And it's really interesting to see how the space industry went from a, let's say, a government kind of controlled industry almost to being challenged by startups. And this is a heavily capital heavy industry. So this is really, really interesting for me. And I will have my eyes on some potential dividend stocks there, or maybe even a growth stock for the 10% in my portfolio. For instance, I've been looking at Virgin Galactic, but I don't know how they will, how the share price currently justifies their future income potential. But yeah.
That's a really interesting one for me. Not for me, really. It's for my son. He loves space and NASA and everything on that. And he's always, he actually said to me, he's looking at some stocks in space, and only because that's what he knows and what he likes. I mean, you ask him anything about space, I mean, anything, names of stuff that I can't even pronounce, he knows. So it'll be, you give me an idea to maybe look at it for him a little bit more, because he needs some help. But anything you come across, send my way, because it'll be interesting. I think Honeywell are a good bet in that. I know they make some stuff. Mm-hmm. And off the top of my head, I can't remember. Obviously, SpaceX is a big one.
SpaceX is not public, right? So I believe we cannot trade in it.
Yeah, but it might go public eventually.
Yeah.
But I'm not too familiar with too many of them. Lockheed maybe another one, but they're all kind of national security kind of stocks, maybe. Yeah. So it'll be it looks like it's starting to heat up the space to Mars, maybe. That's where they're going.
Yeah.
Okay, so this week, like we always do at the end of every quarter, we're gonna maybe take a look at our portfolios and see how they performed. So if you want to start and talk us through how you did this quarter.
So I think if I look at the last quarter, I did quite well, because how I said, I think everyone almost experienced a big bump in their portfolio over the last 2-3 months, like a 10-15% bump, just because of the overall stock market increased, right? So there was no magic there from my side, no smartness, no intelligence. It was just like stock prices going up. But again, performance for me is not so much about stock market, stock prices. It's really about dividend growth. I also, by the way, and I think you read it, published my own annual report today, where I went a little bit more in depth. But I can tell you that what I call my paddy, it's a pretty well-known term, I think, in the wider dividend investing community. But for the people that are new to this, it's the projected annual dividend income, my paddy. It's now at 27.75%. So this means my dividend income is covering for 27.75%. Or is it comma? Should I say dot or comma?
I mean, I'm so used to saying dot now, but it is technically comma. Okay.
So 27.75% covering my expenses. Russ. And this went up by approximately 3% compared to the last quarter. So it's a 10% increase in my expense coverage, which I'm really happy with. And this is mainly due to some high yield acquisitions that I did. So I did Realty Income, which of course is a 4+ yielder. I bought some more Danone for 4% yield. I had the chance to buy some Johnson & Johnson as well, so I'm really happy with that one. It was a purchase at $135, but also Unilever around 4%, Enagas around 9%, and then I had two other stocks that I really dip my toes in. So the first one was SAP after the share price drop. Not so much that I'm really convinced in SAP that it was a value place, but rather to dip my toes in it to start following the company. So it's also really like a really small position, not even 0.20% or something like that. And then I bought some Alibaba last week after the declines because I did a quick back on the napkin discounted cash flow calculation. Is just too cheap to ignore, in my opinion. It's not a dividend stock, so this goes into the 10% growth stocks. So my yield, therefore, there was a lot of high yield involved with this, but still quality, in my opinion. And it really allowed me to further diversify my portfolio. So I'm really, really happy with that, with those acquisitions. This means that also my portfolio yield is currently at 3.69%, which was 3.99% in the last quarter. But this is because of share price appreciation. So if the shares go up, then the yield goes down, the average yield. Having said that, my October dividend income grew with approximately 40%, and November as well with 40% compared to last year. And my December dividend income declined with 3%. And that's mainly because one company decided to pay more in pay a bit earlier in November, and the Shell dividend cut is being cascaded into December because it always pays its dividend in December. But overall, my dividend income compared to last year went up with 29%. So if I then actually look also at how my dividend growth performed year over year. And as I mentioned before, I've written about that also in the annual report. So imagine that I had all the positions that I owned at the end of 2019, so 31 December 2019, those stocks and the dividend income that it generated on that day or for that year in 2019, compared to if I would not have made any stock purchases or stock sales, how it would have performed. In that case, if we would then measure over 1 year, my portfolio would have declined with 12% in dividend income. And this is mainly due to Shell and BHP Billiton, because BHP Billiton paid a special dividend in 2019, which was really large. And now this year it paid only like 60% of what it paid in 2019. And I own this as a mining company. So, and then Shell, of course, with a 60% dividend cut. So those two would have resulted in a 12% total loss of dividend income, which is a lot. But you need to know that my portfolio was horribly designed going into the crisis. I was aware of it because I was overweight in energy, and I was overweight in energy because other stocks in 2019 and 2018 were quite expensive, and the energy sector was really a value. At least that's what I believed at the time, right? So I've been wrong on Shell there. But having said that, I would have declined my organic growth and dividend with 12%. I think my portfolio is much better prepared for that now. There's not such, I said, there's no company anymore with such a weight in my portfolio that can have such an impact almost all by itself on my dividend income. So I'm way better diversified. And if this was the worst year in the last decade, then so be it. I'm still early on in the accumulation phase. I mentioned that I'm around 27.75%, I said, in expense coverage. So it in the long run, it will not really hit me that much or hurt me that much. But I found this really interesting. But if you look at it purely then at dividend income growth year over year, it's 29% because of all the additions that I've done this year as well, which were massive for my portfolio.
Yeah, I get what you're saying, Shell. Maybe you're saying you were wrong, but if you look at that period of time, you're coming out of the oil crisis, was that 2016, 2017, it did look like the energy sector would maybe turn a corner and start to propel. Nobody could predict COVID. So,
yeah.
I mean, I still don't see it as being wrong. In this moment, in this year, it has a negative effect, but yeah. I don't see overall it being a problem. But it is kind of one of the downfalls of being in the accumulation phase and investing monthly, is you're going to be overweight and underweight in some sectors, and there's nothing you can do. You buy where you see there's value.
Yeah.
So it's a consequence. If you took out the special dividend from, I forget the company's name.
BHP.
What was the net effect of that special dividend?
Probably I would have been on minus 10% then.
Minus 10%. Like that. Okay.
Yeah.
So you have what, 16% swing that you need to make for next year?
Yeah, but that's okay. And you know what my main learning from this is that if you want to prevent such a loss of dividend income, diversification is key. And it made me reflect this year a lot on my allocation strategy. That's why I introduced already early on in the year the tier one, tier two, tier three, tier four. And it really works, because if I would have had lost 60% of dividend income from Shell at the time as a tier one company, which is allowed to be maximum 4% of dividend income, I would have lost on that approximately 2.8% in net dividend income in my retirement. So that, and then easily the other organic growth would have covered that gap. So hence why I'm really much more convinced about my allocation strategy. And that was my learning, and I keep sharpening it a little bit. And I rather have that learning now, or the validation now, than then that I figure it out the hard way in 10 years from now when being in retirement. So
Yeah. And what I found refreshing is that you calculate the organic growth of and it's easy to fall into the trap and say my dividends grew, I don't know, 100% or 60%, but how much of that is from added capital year on year? So I read your post, your annual report, the letter to the shareholders is brilliant, but it was quite refreshing to see. But maybe you should have stuck to your savings account this year.
Yeah. That was the most funny conclusion, that my savings account with, what is it, 0.5% yield or 0.2% yield would have performed better than my portfolio from that point of view. Yeah, well, you know, hey, that's reality, EMF. And I think we need to be honest to ourselves and not fool ourselves. So it's a question. Yeah. Maybe I should have been liquidated my whole portfolio, and you know, that's how it goes. Yeah.
But it's refreshing to hear. You don't read or see too many people say that or state it. Like, everybody wants to beat the market. Everybody wants, you know, to be King Kong. But the reality is sometimes you just won't. You have to accept that and learn from it.
Yeah. So people that follow me, please don't take everything I say, or don't follow my guidance, because you might not be able to beat your savings account. Yeah, that's a sad truth. Yeah. So how has your quarter been? How did it go for you?
Yeah, my quarter is good. So I'm still quite young in my portfolio. I think this is what, my third, going into my fourth year. So my growth is a lot bigger. I didn't do the same as you. I cheated. I included the growth from all my acquisitions and what I bought this year. I might go back and check and see my organic growth, but you know what? I've sold so much and bought so much, it's probably not worth it this year. I've really only shaped my portfolio this year, so maybe that's something I might do the following year. But looking at my projected annual dividend income, my paddy account, is as you call it, that's near enough 7% now. So I'm covering 7% of my expenses, which for me is a big deal. I was nowhere near that at the start of the year. It was maybe 1 or 2%. So I've seen a lot of growth, but I've put a lot of money in this year compared to the last 3 years, particularly around March and April when we did see that dip. Looking at my acquisitions, there seems to be a common trend that I didn't realize until I was looking at it, but I've bought Royal Dutch Shell, Intel, Walgreens, Cisco, and IBM. They all have something in common, and they're all they all have question marks over their future. So they're all going to either be horribly, horribly wrong or they're going to be genius plays. I mean, but on the flip side of that, I don't think the downside is as big as the potential upside on that.
Yeah.
I've thrown in some decent stocks with them. So I've bought Johnson & Johnson, Microsoft, and Danone. So I see them as more certainties, if there's any such thing in it. But I've kind of noticed last quarter it was more on these, I'm going to say, quote unquote, value stocks. I mean, they have upside, but there's definitely question marks over every single one of them.
I think they're all facing disruption from outside and a need to really, really step up their transformation.
Yeah.
I think that's key there.
So probably for me, leading into next year, I might not focus as much on them. So like you, what I've learned from you is that tier structure, and I have a certain amount that I want to invest in each, and I'm near enough hitting the limit on each of them. So I might just sit back and watch them and see if my thesis plays out and not. But I don't see the downside be as big as the upside. But look, I could be wrong. But I'm going to focus a little bit more next year on European stocks. I've wrote a blog post recently on the 10 stocks I'm watching. It started out as 14 stocks, but I got lazy and chopped it off at 10. So there's a couple of more stocks that I'm looking at. But I really want to focus on European stocks. I just want to be more exposed to the euro. I know there's currency fluctuations, and now might be an actual better time to start buying American stocks. I realize that with a weaker dollar, but I kind of want to get to know my own market a little bit more. So that's where my focus is going to be. Your blog is helping with that. I mean, you wrote a great article and video on Enagas, a company I probably wouldn't have looked at, and there's some other companies out there. So that's where I'm going. My sector allocation hasn't changed. So information technology is still up there, followed by consumer staples and healthcare from that point of view. But I don't know, I'm quite happy with how I'm going. My portfolio yield is quite high, actually. It's 5%, but I'm not surprised considering I've bought the companies that I've bought. They're all kind of high yields at the minute. I mean, I bought T as well at the start of the year. They were like 6 or 7% as well. So we'll see next year. So this year for me is more of a benchmark, and I've invested before that, but I've never really tracked it or never gave it as much attention as I have. So this time next year, I'm hoping I'll set the benchmark now and I'll be able to track it more going forward. One thing I did do though is I did compare how I was doing against the S&P 500 since I started, and it's interesting to know that I was beating the market all the way up until February of this year. And then I've underperformed the market horribly, horribly. And obviously, I don't have the exposure to the tech stocks that the S&P 500 maybe has, but I was doing well up until then.
And you invested a lot in those value plays, like you just mentioned. And just, I also, because maybe for the readers, we always have a Google Doc that we prepare where we have some of our storyline, right? And what I did below your chart, I pasted in the S&P 500 Schiller PE and the normal S&P 500 PE. And if you see the multiple expansion that has been happening over the last year, then it's no wonder that you're underperforming, because you've been investing heavily in companies that didn't recover in their multiples. Mm-hmm. Yes, so it's not like the earnings grew so much in the S&P 500, the multiples expanded a lot. So don't be too hard on yourself regarding the S&P 500 with that, because actually your portfolio might be more resistant, like you say, on the downside as well, if shit hits the fan potentially next year.
Yeah, we'll see. I know during COVID in March, you can see the downside. There's a chart here that I'll share, but my downside was nearly 15, 16%. And the S&P 500 was maybe 12%. So we'll see if I'm more resilient. Look, I've took a gamble in some of my stuff. I stand by each of the companies. I'm fully aware that they all have their problems, but I'm just hoping that they are good value plays at the minute and they'll play out in the next 3 to 5 years.
Yeah. And I think you're outperforming the S&P 500 on the yield at the moment.
Oh, and the yield, yeah. What's the S&P 500? It's 1.96 or something. something.
But I'm mentioning this. You're a dividend investor. You're not a growth investor.
Yeah.
So it's also important to remember that. Yeah. Oh, good. Okay. And what I really find interesting is your sector allocation at the moment. Because, for instance, you have really outliers in IT and consumer staples. But after that, it's quite well diversified, right? It's quite equal weight in many of the sectors that you have. I see you have nothing in materials and mining, let's say, but yeah.
Yeah, materials has nothing at the moment, so maybe I might want to add something. But I suppose the goal would be to have them equal rate. Maybe real estate might be a little bit higher there. But no, I'm happy enough with how it's come along. In the accumulation phase, you're never going to have them in sync. So it's just buying what we see as value at the time. And one thing I'm happy about is AT&T are no longer my largest position. I've reduced them.
Yeah.
So they are still my largest gross dividend paying company, but they're not my largest position. So Realty Income is number one. Royal Dutch Shell is number two. Danone is number three, or Danone. Intel number four. And then T has made its way all the way down to number five.
Wow. Well, that's quite a change in your portfolio in just 3 months. Well done, because I know that you wanted them to be lower.
Yeah, they were above 10%, at one point nearly 12%. And I felt a little bit uncomfortable at that level with one particular company. So, and looking at the top five now, they're all equally spread between 6% and 7%. So it's a lot more equal. And I'm a little bit more happier with my positioning.
And maybe regarding what you mentioned with real estate, we had this get together last Sunday with a few other fellow dividend investors, and Dividend Dane was there. And I learned that he is really big and knowledgeable about real estate. So you might want to check up with him on some real estate ideas to invest in. I found him really knowledgeable about that space.
Yeah, it's. I think I mentioned to you off air at some point that I want to have some real estate investment trusts from Europe. I know I have Realty Income, and I've been looking at some other US ones, but I'd like to have one from Europe. I had an Irish one before, and then they went out of business, so that wasn't too good. So my track record isn't great. But yeah, no, Dividend Dane, I'll, if you're listening, I'll probably slide into your DMs and ask you about a few real estates in Europe.
Cool. Well, thanks. I think we can be both proud on the quarter performance. I think if I look at what you have done and the way how you've strengthened your portfolio, but also took some risks in some of the IT stocks under pressure, I think it's quite nice to observe that and to see that. So well done.
Yeah, we'll see. In the next 4 years, I could be fall flat on my face, or I could look like a genius. So time will tell.
Well, you know, it's a thin line. Okay, so let's get to the listener questions section of the show. And maybe I shall take the first one, actually, now that I see it, because it comes from Piotr, one of our dedicated listeners. And he asked, do you have any exposure on precious metals in your portfolio, or at least minor dividend stocks? So yes, I've got BHP. I bought it like 4 or 5 years ago. Then they cut the dividend during the oil and gas crisis in 2016. But I stuck to it because they really quickly recovered their dividend at the time. And, you know, they have a dividend policy where they just want to pay out almost everything in dividends after their capex. So you can always expect a juicy dividend from BHP, but you need to be anticipating on the fact that it might sometimes... cut their dividend, which is okay because it's for me a tier four company, but that's it. But if you're thinking about the EV industry and looking at copper or lithium or something like that, I'm not owning anything of that. I would be open to hear some suggestions because I do believe that the electrical vehicle industry is a major trend going on. So if there are some dividend stocks that you are aware of that have a decent value, for me that means typically under 20 PE, then let me know, because I will definitely like to analyze them because I'm interested in them.
Nice. Okay, cool. The second question then is from the Wolf of Harcourt Street. And he asked, what are your number one emerging trends that you see for 2021?
I think it will be online publishing, like PDFs. And I think Gumroad would be a really good one to consider. I think Gumroad is booming. And
are you going to plug an ebook here now that I don't know about?
Yes, and there are only 7 left for 30% discount. And be quick, because I just saw I sold one again. There are only 6 left. No, but I can tell you what I think. I'm just pissing a bit here, but and Wolf knows me. What I really think, it will be all around the reopening of the economy, but it will be not with the same behaviors like we had in the past. Yes, and this is the trend where I think that we will, for instance, see a really quick pickup in travel again. I think people are tired from sitting home, so I expect a lot in travel, but not the typical travel. I think people might want to do something more exclusive in the upcoming year. One, they have been sitting on cash last year for a lot, at least the people that that didn't lose their job, of course. Second, I think people want to probably pleasure themselves more with luxury in return to make up for the last year. So I believe travel, anything travel and luxury related, that combination might be the sweet spot if you find value there.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I know lots of people, and I've spoke to Wolf on this privately as well, and one thing we agree on is we can't wait to travel, just to get out. I normally travel 3 or 4 times a year, so it's been on lockdown is hard. You just kind of get cabin fever, and I know myself, once the borders open up, I will splash out, take the wife away on a luxury weekend or week away and just enjoy ourselves. But yeah, that's a pretty good trend.
How about yourself?
I don't know. When I looked at this question earlier, I was thinking electric vehicles and energy, the energy transition. I know in Europe, we've had 2020 was, there was a lot of targets with energy emissions up to 2020. And now that's changed and pushed to 2030. So I know countries will start pushing this again and trying to hit their targets because they're getting huge fines. So I can see smart meter, smart grids, particularly in Ireland, and electric vehicles being starting to push and become a little bit more mainstream this year or next year. Okay, and then we have one last question from Tiago Diaz, and he asks, I'm going to ask you because I know you love banks, but he said, what are your views on HSBC going into 2021?
Sorry, Tiago, but I have no views there. I know he's referring also to the dividend calculation in 2021. So the issue that I have with banks in particular, even more than with other sectors, is that they are so heavily regulated, and I wouldn't feel comfortable owning banks when I would be in retirement, because the government can do anything, suspend them from paying dividends, and that would be like a double-edged sword for me in retirement. Second to that, I believe that banks are being disrupted at the moment by fintech. Thirdly, I have issues with their ethics. So that's why I'm not investing in banks in general. And that's and he also mentioned that they don't have shareholder interest in mind. Yes, that's what I learned in 2008 and 2009. Yeah, I think there is something still sick in this sector, that which will probably never go away in the financial industry there, because a lot is about return investments. And I think it just creates generally the wrong incentives and the wrong behavior, probably attracts the wrong people that as well. And I know we might be having some people that listen to this that are working in the banking sector, but I wouldn't say that every employee of a bank is not having the right incentive, because I know many IT people in banks, which are really, really good people. But I'm talking here about the people in the core process and the investment banking process. That's what I'm talking about. They live in a bubble. They live in a different world, in my opinion. Having said that, I think that the insurance sector is a way more interesting industry at the moment to look into. And I find the insurance industry probably the most undervalued industry at the moment.
Yeah, for me, the red flag, as you said, is the dividend cut last year. I'd probably disregard them straight away. And even to ask the question that they don't, do they have the shareholders' interests at heart? I mean, you know the answer to that already. They probably don't. So for me, they were not on my radar. They won't be on my radar, and I'm staying clear.
Good. Well, thanks for the questions today. It's always fun and nice for us to answer them, and it also inspires us to think in certain areas. So thanks all. Also, happy new year to all of you. And let's move to the last section. So EMF, it's your choice this week. What's your stock pick of the week or your stock recommendation? I'm very interested. I'm going to lay down now with some popcorn.
So my stock pick for this week is Sanofi. So they are a French healthcare company. They currently have 26 years of dividend increases, which is quite good for a European company. I suppose their 10-year growth rate is not great. I think it's 2.34%. So it could be a little bit better from a growth point of view. But at the moment, you're getting them at quite a high yield. I think they're around 4% at the current price, €78. I ran a quick calculation on them. I did both dividend discount model and a discounted cash flow model, and I have them valued around €124, which makes them quite a bit undervalued, including a margin of safety of, say, 20% on my calculation. So they look to be undervalued. They're on my watch list of European stocks for this year. Their cash flow, free cash flow payout ratio is about 76%, so there's still plenty of room for them to increase next year. And their debt is relatively low for the industry, so that's why I'm picking this week a European aristocrat and someone I'm quite interested in buying shortly.
Yeah, I think Sanofi is a really interesting healthcare company. Also, when we look at their pipeline. This is the issue, right? I've got my limit in my portfolio on 40 companies, but if I would follow my urges, I would be easily to 80, and then Sanofi will be definitely in there.
Yeah.
Good pick. Nice one.
I mean, that's hard. I'm only at 25 companies, so I still have room for six more. So I'm quite happy with this choice, and I'll probably be buying them maybe this week or next week.
Yeah. Cool. So thanks, EMF. It was a nice show again, the first one for this year. So we're kicking off nicely, I think. And I very much enjoyed it again.
Yeah, it's nice. It's nice for me to do these, to compare how I've done and then just to see how you're doing and your thoughts. It's always an interesting exercise. And it's probably something I would never do if I didn't have the blog or didn't have this podcast. So it's good. It keeps me on track, keeps me focused. We spoke a little bit about our goals and what we want to achieve over the year offline. We might do that separately online, maybe mm-hmm. next week or the week after. But yeah, no, I'm excited to see how my investments go, blog goes, and the podcast. So here's to a good 2021.
Super. So everyone, have a good remainder of the weekend and speak to you next week again.
Adios.